Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. We open our show today with an update on the healthcare sign-up surge. Consumers signing up for new healthcare options, or Obamacare, at healthcare.gov rose sevenfold in December when over 975,000 people enrolled. From October 1st to December 24th, a total of 1.1 million people signed up for the new health insurance marketplaces nationwide through the federal site, and another million or more signed up through state websites, ending the year at about two-thirds of the 3 million-person goal set by the White House. Marilyn Tavener is the administrator at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. She called this a welcome surge in enrollment as millions of Americans seek access to affordable health care coverage. She added that the surge came in part because the administration met its goal for finally improving the healthcare.gov site. She added that the site supported 83,000 users simultaneously on December 23rd alone, just before the deadline to sign up for coverage that would start January 1st. Now, if you missed that deadline, you can still sign up by January 15th for coverage that will start February 1st. In California, the website to learn about health exchange options in our state is coveredca.com and nationally, healthcare.gov. The next challenge for the Obama administration, however, will be how the implementation of healthcare coverage rolls out. Potential glitches could occur in the system if records of some people who signed up failed to be processed promptly, for example, which could leave doctors to either trust patients who say they have coverage in place or charge for services up front until the proof of coverage comes through. So far, the federal healthcare reforms have enabled many low-income individuals to qualify for low-cost healthcare. Though that's still a small fraction of the 41 million Americans who had no health insurance at all. But administration officials say they're hoping enrollment will continue to increase before the March deadline when mandates for people to have health insurance kicks in. The rollout has had flaws, notably the initial website that proved to be unable to handle a large volume of visitors at first. President Barack Obama also drew criticism for not living up to a promise that people could keep their existing policies if they chose. The president did extend the option to keep existing insurance for a year, but California opted not to allow this extension. So some consumers have had existing plans canceled and found themselves forced to pay higher rates for private insurance if their incomes were too high to qualify for subsidies under the Obamacare plans. In 2014, insurance plans will have to comply with standards set by the federal government, and that could improve the quality of coverage for many Americans, even if they didn't purchase the Obamacare plans. A rollout of federal health care options for businesses has been delayed by 1 year. Enrollment of individuals is expected to increase once consumers see friends, coworkers, and neighbors getting, in some cases, better coverage for less money or affordable coverage when they had none before. And starting March 1st, if you don't have health insurance of some form, penalties will begin to kick in. The prospect of many more East County residents having insurance raises an intriguing potential benefit for our region. Mark Arabo, president of the Neighborhood Markets Association, which represents Chaldean-owned businesses locally, told East County Magazine that supervisors in the past have balked at approving a county hospital in East County. Supervisors cited the high number of uninsured residents that they feared would hike up healthcare costs for them. Now that everyone has to have insurance, Arabo concluded, his group plans to ask supervisors to reconsider approving a county hospital because, he said, everyone should have access to affordable health care.
This is Ed Barreno with a sports report for East County Magazine on KNSJ. The Bolts are in. Yes, the Chargers will have an opportunity to compete for the Super Bowl this year as the Cards remarkably fell in their favor this weekend. The playoff picture was stacked with four teams vying for the sixth seed in the AFC. With losses in the morning games by the Baltimore Ravens and Miami Dolphins, the Chargers only needed to win against the Kansas City Chiefs to secure the sixth seed. The Chiefs had already clinched the AFC's fifth seed and benched some starters for Sunday's game against the Chargers. However, it was a close game. The Chargers barely managed to hang on for overtime, as the Chiefs missed what would have been the winning kick. The kick created some controversy over a non-call by the refs, which would have led to another kick attempt. However, the Chargers went on to win in overtime by a score of 27-24. The Chargers will be playing against the Cincinnati Bengals in Cincinnati on Sunday, January 5th at 10:05 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
You can help create a cleaner environment in our community. The La Mesa Chamber of Commerce is hosting a free electronic waste recycling collection event on Saturday, January 11th and Sunday, January 12th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. The event will be held in the parking lot of Grossmont Center in La Mesa between Choose Fitness and the Fuddruckers restaurant. This event is a free service to everyone, so you can properly dispose of those old TVs, computers, printers, and other approved items, and at the same time, help reduce illegal dumping in our city and landfills. E-wastes accepted, in working condition or not, include computer monitors, TV sets, PC systems, printers, laptops, copiers, scanners, fax machines, toner cartridges, UPS and PDAs, power supplies, mainframe units, networking equipment, motherboard systems, VCRs, CDs or DVD players, home entertainment systems, phones, portable devices, car and forklift batteries, though there's a $5 fee for microwave ovens. Sorry, but this event does not accept refrigerators, washer dryers, fluorescent light bulbs, or household batteries. You can show your support for a cleaner environment by sending e-waste away from our cities and landfills for the appropriate recycling process. For more information, you can contact the Chamber of Commerce at 619-465-7700 or email chamber@lamesachamber.com.
This is Ed Barena with this week's Local Government Report. Most local boards and commissions are taking this week off due to the New Year's holiday. A notable exception is the Boulevard Planning Group, which will meet on January 2nd with a busy agenda. A draft environmental impact report for Soitec's 4 proposed solar projects in Boulevard will be available for review and public comment. 2 new alternative sites in Jewel Valley totaling over 1,400 acres are also proposed. The planning group will also weigh whether to take a position on the proposed release of a sexually violent predator in the community.
Meatballs fame just keeps growing. On New Year's Day, the Rose Parade will feature a float honoring Meatball. That's the now famous black bear residing at Lions, Tigers, and Bears, the rescue facility in Alpine. Meatball was removed from the wild after he started raiding trash cans in a suburban Glendale neighborhood, where he had a fondness for, of course, frozen meatballs. Now the city of Glendale is drawing attention to the situation of Meatball and other wildlife with its float, titled Let's Be Neighbors. It features a mechanized meatball in a trash can surrounded by other forest creatures. Meatball was fortunate, since wild animals that cause problems several times can be put down, or, as in Meatball's case, placed in a sanctuary. But it costs about $10,000 a year to keep just one large animal, such as a bear, in a sanctuary. Lions, Tigers, and Bears is now raising funds to build a second bear habitat to accommodate its growing bear population, with matching funds pledged. Meatball, who kept returning to Glendale after being shipped 3 times to a national forest, has become a glaring example of how wild animals get in trouble when people feed them. Bobby Brink at Lions, Tigers, and Bears has an education program now to teach people how to coexist with wild animals. "We try to teach the kids why we don't feed wildlife," she said. There's even a children's book now about Meatball, titled The Story of Meatball 210, The Hungry Bear. The number 210 refers to the tag number that Fish and Game gave Meatball. All proceeds from the book will benefit Lions, Tigers, and Bears' efforts to provide sanctuaries for Meatball and other large animals in need of a safe haven. For more information, you can visit www.lionstigersandbears.org.
This is East County Magazine's Capital Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
Long-term unemployment benefits expired on Saturday after Congress failed to authorize an extension. People who have been out of work for 6 months or longer will no longer be receiving unemployment checks. About 1.3 million Americans lose benefits immediately, including 222,000 people in California. By the end of 2014, it's estimated that almost 5 million people will lose unemployment benefits. Those checks range from $40 to $450 a week, depending on what people were earning before, so this is a major blow for individuals who may have no other source of income. The New York Times reports that removing this safety net for unemployed workers will push hundreds of thousands of households below the poverty line. With the cutoff, only one out of every four unemployed Americans will receive jobless benefits. That's the lowest proportion in half a century. Though the rate of joblessness nationally has fallen to about 7%, U.S. Secretary of Labor Thomas Perez says it's taking longer for people to find jobs nowadays than in the past. Back when unemployment extensions were first approved, when George W. Bush was president, it took an average of 17 weeks for an unemployed person to find a job. Today, it takes 36 weeks. That's over twice as long. California has offered 63 weeks of unemployment benefits during the recession, but now all states, including California, will drop to a maximum of just 26 weeks of benefits, 6 months, for all unemployed people. Democrats in Washington have sought a temporary extension of benefits for the long-term unemployed, but Republicans in the House of Representatives have refused to extend those benefits. Those opposed to the extension say it's too costly at $25 billion and that extending benefits provides a crutch that could stop people from looking for work. Those who support extending benefits say the problem isn't that recipients are lazy, but that jobs are simply hard to find. Supporters also argue that long-term unemployment benefits not only provide a safety net for families in need, but also spur the economy, since recipients spend the money on goods and services, while cutting off unemployment benefits would slow economic recovery. In San Diego, there were nearly 110,000 unemployed people here in November, the most recent month for which data is available. That's down from 133,000 about a year ago. But in portions of East County, the rate is much higher. And among Iraqi Chaldean immigrants in El Cajon, for example, the unemployment rate remains about 60%. Coming on the heels of cuts in the food stamp program known as SNAP, or Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, the complete cutoff of unemployment funds for people who've been out of work a long time is an even harder blow. These cuts are also likely to lead to a rise in homelessness, a troubling prospect. A new survey by the U.S. Conference of Mayors found deep concern about both hunger and homelessness among the mayors surveyed. In the cities that were surveyed, 20% of people who needed food assistance last year did not receive it, and over three-fourths of cities had to cut the amount of food available for the hungry due to lack of resources. One in every five homeless people who needed assistance didn't receive it last year, and lack of beds caused emergency shelters in 71% of the cities surveyed to turn away homeless families with children. Eliminating unemployment benefits for millions of out-of-work Americans is expected to increase hunger, homelessness, and hopelessness among our nation's poor.
Hello, my name is David Dickens, David Charles Dickens to be exact. I want to talk to you today, audience, about the links between me and Charles Dickens and the writers that have become in our family. According to my late grandfather, Charles Elmer Dickens, who died in the summer of 1992, prior to departing, I was told I am related to Charles Dickens, one of our greatest authors of all time, and I am four generations down, so a great, 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 great grandfather, right down the family tree. I'm a current freelancer for East County Magazine, write mostly sports features. However, if something creative comes my way, I'm always happy to take it. Also come from another family member, my father, Bill Dickens, who currently owns eastcountysports.com, has been covering sports locally in East County for over 43 years. I'm going to speak about Charles Dickens today and one of his finest novels, A Christmas Carol, that was written in December of 1843. Not only is this a great selection for the season, but also referring to Dickens' early childhood, humiliating experiences, his sympathy for the poor folks, and great fairy tales he was read as a child. The lesson that should be learned from this particular novel is how greed and the love of money can lead to destruction, selfishness. But in the end, after visits from the Christmas past, Christmas present, and Christmas future spirits from the novel, Ebenezer Scrooge learns to appreciate life. If we as human beings have an abundance of wealth, It should be shared with the less fortunate. The love of human beings far outweighs the gift of wealth. Dickens' humiliating experiences are not specifically indicated in this novel. However, his conflicting feelings for his father as a result of these experiences are responsible for the double personality of the novel's protagonist, Ebenezer Scrooge. In 1824, Dickens' father, John, was hauled off to prison at the Marshalsea, and Charles, 12 at the time, only 12, was forced to stay at inns nearby, pawn off his great book collection, and drop out of school, and take up employment at a blacking factory. Charles had a deep sense of etiquette and intellect, and was very uncomfortable in the factory atmosphere and the co-workers who worked directly with him. His co-workers referred to him as the young gentleman. Charles' father was released after 3 months in confinement. His father made him return to the factory instead of going back into school, which obviously was a mistake, and it only angered and humiliated Charles even further. Charles basically says his happy life went on to be nothing but anguish and pain. These disturbances caused many psychological issues and haunting memories, as Charles goes on. Charles both loved and despised his father. These psychological issues assisted in creating the two different personalities of Ebenezer Scrooge, a cold, stingy, greedy individual, and on the other personality, sociable generosity and goodwill toward all men was his outlook, an angel type of man. Another inspiration was early in his childhood that he observed the lives of men, women, and children in the most poverty-stricken areas of London and witnessed the social injustices they suffered. So basically, he went on after writing this novel, and he actually, years later, he took it to another level and actually was reading it live on stage, which definitely got a great following. And once he departed, of course, we also know quite a few people went on to create A Christmas Carol movie. I believe the most recent one that everybody has probably seen, the animated version of A Christmas Carol starring Jim Carrey, which is definitely something to see, but it's more a comedic look into the actual novel, which that's not the direction that Charles Dickens was really wanting you to understand. And what I would like you folks in the audience to get from this really is, let's enjoy ourselves as a family and have a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and not be all about the gifts and what we could and could not afford this year. Just the warm hearts, getting together, and loving each other. I leave you with that, and this is David Charles Dickens signing off. And again, have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year on behalf of East County Magazine.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week.
This is Miriam Raftery filling in for Ariel Brook this week. Ariel is taking some time off over the holidays. As we head into the new year, Destination East County brings you New Year's Eve celebrations that are happening right here in East County. If you're looking for some festive ways to ring in the new year, you don't have to head to the East Coast, since East County has plenty of celebrations, from New York-style parties to gourmet dinners, concerts, an art show, and more. Viejas Resort is offering an evening of fire and ice, with a performance by Rising Star, dancing, and even a traditional ball drop similar to that in Times Square. Out in the desert, a live drawing workshop will be held at the Art Institute in Borrego Springs from 6:30 to 8:30 on New Year's Eve. In East County's mountains, the Santa Isabel Casino is having a New Year's Eve dinner along with a party. Some restaurants are having special holiday menus, among them the Dolce Cafe Italiano in Rancho San Diego. Bobo's, the new cone restaurant in La Mesa, is also offering a special New Year's Eve menu. The site books quickly, so reservations are recommended there. Now, for our military residents in the East County, Morale, Welfare, and Recreation is having holiday buffets. They are free to military personnel. It goes without saying that we should all be safe this holiday season, and the CHP has put out some guidelines
Do not drive if you imbibe. The CHP will be enforcing DUI offenses with extra patrols through January 1st, and officers will be on the alert for both speeders and drunk drivers. So if you plan to party hardy, be sure to have a designated driver, take a taxi, or stay overnight at a hotel. Now, there's also some ongoing events to help make the season fun. Viejas Ice Rink outside the Viejas Shopping Outlets in Alpine is open through January 5th. Skaters can lace up their skates and go, while spectators can grab a cup of hot cocoa or snacks beside the rink, take in the sights and the holiday music and the decor. A Julian specialty is the Julian Christmas Train Express, which is running through December 31st, where guests can take a one-mile train ride to an 1870 gold rush mine with some surprises. The Lemon Grove Historical Society has been presenting a retrospective exhibition of work by Ed Roxburgh, a noted muralist, carver, and book illustrator, in the Lemon Grove Library. It runs through the end of December. Paintings and illustrations will be accompanied by photographs of the artist at work on the Dr. Seuss mural at the Old Globe Theater. In Julian, on Sundays, guests can enjoy Music at the Marketplace, a year-round, family-friendly event with live local music and barbecue at Winola Farms Marketplace. All of these events and more can be found on our calendar and in our festival and events section at www.eastcountymagazine.org. On behalf of all of us here, have a safe and happy new year.
See you around, East County.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
After 20 years, Hawk Watch, a popular wildlife educational program in Ramona featuring hawks, owls, and eagles, has been canceled for 2014. Visitors can still go birdwatching on their own at the Ramona Grasslands Preserve, but there will be no organized presentations or up-close looks at captive birds of prey. The Wildlife Research Institute, which ran the program, announced the cancellation on its website with no explanation. However, the program's demise likely stems from trouble raising funds for the nonprofit after news broke that its founder, David Bittner, was sentenced in federal court in August to unlawful taking of a golden eagle without a permit and failing to file any data reports with the federal government for a four-year period on birds that he abandoned. Bittner was sentenced to probation and a $7,500 fine. Critics called that a slap on the wrist, since Bittner and the Wildlife Research Institute had raked in over $600,000 in consulting fees for his work on behalf of large energy companies. Iberdrola and Pattern Energy hired him to write reports justifying their wind projects, Thule Wind in McCain Valley and the Ocotillo Express Wind Facility. Sempra Energy also hired Bittner as its Eagle consultant for its massive Energia Sierra Juarez wind project in Baja California, Mexico. The sentencing memorandum revealed that Bittner had a long history of noncompliance with both state and federal laws protecting birds of prey, including a 9-month period when witnesses contended that 90% of the eagles he fitted with transmitters died. The state of Ohio, back in 1979, had revoked his bird banding permit because he was convicted for taking wild turkey eggs and having wild turkey vultures and a snow owl without a permit, and he didn't file banding reports required by law. But he continued banding wild raptors even after the permit there was revoked. Bittner falsely told probation officials, according to his sentencing memorandum, that was the first time in 48 years his permit had lapsed. But in fact, he had no active federal permit to ban birds from 1980 to 1997. That's a 17-year period. It was reactivated in 1997 after Bittner filed an application from his new location in Ramona, California. After that, Bittner advised that he had retained nearly 2,500 bird bans, which are strictly regulated, but he never accounted for his activities with those bans. So he later lost his permit again and has been operating without a valid permit since 2000. In 2011, he provided the State Department of Fish and Game with a report on nearly 1,000 raptors, including 200 golden eagles he banded, with no state permit issued. His federal permit expired in 2010 and was later renewed despite questions over hundreds of bans that were not accounted for, including eagles in San Diego County. He was also found to be using wild raptors in educational programs for the public at his Wildlife Research Institute in Ramona. He illegally trapped and marked 164 birds while his permits were lapsed, including 29 eagles in San Diego and Imperial County. He also illegally banded an injured bird and released it with multiple transmitters, a practice that bird experts said had no scientific justification. Witnesses said that bird had trouble flying and it was later found dead, and Bittner never turned in flight data on the bird. Most shocking, several witnesses reported a mortality rate of 90% for birds mounted with Bittner's transmitters during a single nine-month period, and he only reported a 20% mortality rate. Bittner claimed he had no time to manage permits in eight states. He was also found to illegally have four freezers full of dead birds, including many migratory birds. 11 of those were golden eagles, some dating back for years. Now, dead eagles are required to be turned over to the federal government immediately so that feathers can be used by Native Americans for ceremonial purposes. He also conducted a helicopter survey of eagle nests in Joshua Tree National Park even after he was denied a permit for use of a helicopter due to fears it would disturb the birds. He never published any scientific papers on his findings and has not turned over results to state or federal authorities, they say, which is required by law. Instead, he only gave his data to his paying corporate energy clients. As part of his probation terms, the federal government has asked him to submit data on thousands of unreported bird bans, as well as data from the transmitters. The government also required that Bittner return all bans still in his possession and provide full accountability. Failure to do so could result in his probation being revoked. Before his sentencing, Bittner's lawyer argued that her client had been punished already due to the negative publicity generated by the case and that he had lost clients who paid for his services. She also argued that Bittner was set to retire and just wanted to protect the birds. This has negatively affected the Wildlife Research Institute, the lawyer contended, which she said might close in 2014 due to lack of operating funds. Bittner's Wildlife Research Institute recently sent out a fundraiser signed by Bittner seeking funds for additional raptor research, including eagles, without disclosing his guilty plea. Among other things, that letter asked donors for support of education programs and to conduct golden eagle research to aid agencies in making sound scientific decisions regarding wind, solar, and other development projects. Bittner's lawyer closed in court by saying that no harm has been done to any birds, but the prosecution disputed that point. Birds were harmed, said Assistant U.S. Attorney Melanie Pearson at the sentencing hearing. She concluded that Bittner had been far more concerned about economic gain than the bird's well-being. Bittner told the judge he was afraid his legacy would be the end of the Wildlife Research Institute. He and his wife, Lee, added that they raised the money necessary to buy the Ramona grasslands and sell the property to the Nature Conservancy. This is raptor habitat, including, most recently, a reported nesting pair of bald eagles. Bittner insisted that everything we do is standard operating procedure. Donna Tisdale is chair of the Boulevard Planning Group and an officer with the Protect Our Communities Foundation. She has asked for a review of Bittner's studies of local wind projects, including Tule Wind, which has been approved by the federal government but has not yet been built on federally protected land. We support the Justice Department's vigilance in prosecuting Bittner for his serious transgressions and unlawful behavior, said Tisdale, who has long contended that there are eagles in areas slated for wind turbines where Bittner claimed there were none. When unethical and basically corrupt experts like Bittner side with industry over avian protection, Tisdale concluded, our beautiful birds literally get clobbered with the blunt end of the turbine blades. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provide important information about much more than wildfires. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Indians.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. My guest today is Dr. Nori Robbins. She is a geologist and an adjunct faculty member at San Diego State University's Geology Department. And she's here today to talk to us about her wonderful program to bring science to children on Native American reservations. Nori, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me, Miriam.
Can you tell us what the Science Explorers Club is all about?
Well, Science Explorers Club is a way to get Indian kids outside and get them wet and dirty. That's the beginning of science. The issue is we need more scientists, and we need more scientists of every color, and we need more people who have different ideas and different cultures to bring them into science. And the way you start science is working with kids. And the way kids love science is outdoors and getting wet and dirty. So really the issue is not so much getting the kids wet and dirty, but getting the mothers used to the fact that the kids are going to get wet and dirty.
I've trekked along on one of these adventures that you lead, and it was, I have to say, it was a lot of fun. It was like going back to being a kid. We were stomping through the creek bed while the kids were scooping up crawdads, and you were teaching them about the rock formations and the geology and the plants and the animals and everything. It was just great. So how on earth did you get into this, Nori? How did it all get started?
Well, that's a really good question, asking me how it got started. I'm a research scientist retired from the U.S. Geological Survey. And my sister Penny, she is a teacher, and she said, you know, you scientists, you love what you're doing. But she said, you never tell kids that science is so much fun. And so she said, let's go outside and let's get some kids involved to show them what science looks like when you're outside. And so she took me outside and she turned me from a boring scientist into a teacher of outdoor science.
Fantastic. And what specifically motivated you to reach out to the reservations, the Native American people in our area?
As a geologist, I know how to explore for resources, and I know how to exploit resources. And that's what you do when you're a geologist. But and I worked for the federal government, so we kept getting these different presidents. So during Clinton Gore, all of a sudden, everything switched from exploitation and exploration to cleaning up the environment. And I said, I don't understand. I have 3 degrees in geology, a bachelor's, a master's, and a PhD, and no one ever told me how to take care of the earth. So, and I went looking for courses, couldn't find any courses, went looking for literature, couldn't find any literature. So I said, well, who teaches kids? I mean, who teaches taking care of the environment? And I said, okay, Indian people do. So let me go find some Indian scientists and go get taught how to take care of the environment. Mm-hmm. So I went searching, and I couldn't find any Indian scientists. Eventually, I was walking around in my office, and I realized one of the women lived with a Pawnee woman from social worker, Pawnee from Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. The BIA office was near the USGS office, and so there were finally, you know, Indian people wandering around looking for maps at the Geological Survey. So I finally got up my nerve, and I asked her, why can't I find any Indian scientists? And she said, role models. She said, it really matters to have role models. She said, on my reservation in Oklahoma, we had social workers and lawyers. I became a social worker. She said, I would have made a great geologist, but no one ever told me that there was geology.
My. So you set out to bring geology to the reservations.
Exactly. So I said, when I retire, I'm going to teach outdoor science to kids, and I'm going to see if I could raise up the next generation of Indian scientists.
Very good. Now, how many children are involved in your programs, Nori, and what ages do you work with?
There's about 400 kids a year come to the program, and they range in age. My sister taught that you get your profession at age 7 or 8, so she said you hit them up at 7 or 8, and so I sort of said, okay, that's the age group I want. But we really are 4 to 11. So I get 4-year-olds, not just 4-year-olds by themselves, but the 4-year-olds that have older siblings are always older. And you forget that they're 4. until all of a sudden something happens and they start crying and you go, why is this kid crying? Oh, he's only four. And then I go as far as 11 years old, and at 11, you know, the teenaging starts coming on in, and I lose them at 11. But you get this group that really care, that really like this outdoor science stuff, but they're too old for the little kids. So I get some 14 and 15-year-olds that hang around with their cell phones in their ears and or their iPhones in their ears, and but they're hanging around. They're going to help with the kids.
There you go. What are some of the activities that you do, and where do you take them?
Well, I try to get them as the year goes by. I'm a monthly program on all these reservations. Mm-hmm. And so the
how many reservations, by the way, are you working with?
Yeah, so right now I'm working on 8 reservations. Mm-hmm. For many years, I was funded by National Science Foundation for 8 years. And so they gave me my mileage, paid for gasoline. So
fantastic.
I really pushed. So I worked on 11 reservations for a whole many years.
Was that a victim of budget cuts back there? Or?
No, we got funded twice. Mm-hmm. I mean, no
very
one
good.
Ever
so
gets
grants.
Funded and then extended. But National Science Foundation recognizes they need Indian scientists. They need scientists of every color and
great.
Every culture. And so they funded us.
So back to the activities. Tell us what you do and where you go.
Yeah, exactly. So the month decides what we're going to do. So in the spring, we'll do spring wildflowers. In the summer, then we'll do the great lizard hunt. In December or January, when it's freezing to death and the kids are finally wearing coats, we'll do mountain climbing, which is a hill, which I can get them up a hill in 45 minutes and down in a half hour, because I'm an hour and a half after school program. So we do all the sciences. So we do hydrology, water. We do geology, collect rocks. We do soil scientists, dig for dirt. We do biology, botany, wildflowers, biology. We'll do tracks and trails for animals.
Sounds fascinating. Are you a tribal member yourself, Nori?
I'm not an Indian tribal member, but I'm Jewish, and we are tribal people. We know that we're tribal people. You know, when my Indian friends bump into somebody and want to suspect that they're Indian, they'll raise two fingers to sort of ask, are you Indian? Well, my people, we ask, are you MOT? Are you a member of the tribe? So we know that we're tribal people. So, and tribal people have specific things that they do in their culture, and so I'm tribal.
Very good. What are some of the other programs out there for Indian youths?
One of the things that we tried to do with our National Science Foundation funding was to build a pipeline. I was in charge of the little kids, that's the 4 to 11-year-olds, mm-hmm. and then we couldn't find somebody who was acting with middle school kids, you know, middle school teenagers. But then the high school kids, people are always trying to get the high school kids pulling from the universities and pushing from below. So the best program is called Young Native Scholars. Now it's called Intertribal Youth. And Mark Chavez runs that one. Mm-hmm. And what he does is take reservation teenagers, that's the 15, 16, 17-year-olds from San Diego County reservations to reservations in Northern California. And he brings reservation kids from teenagers from Northern California to San Diego reservations so that the people are beginning meeting each other. And then they stay in the dorm at UCSD mm-hmm. so that they interface with what's going on at colleges.
Nice.
So that's one program. And then the second program is the American Indian Recruitment Program, the AIR. And that was two lawyers from the Mesa Grande Reservation, Dwayne and Devon Lamayaseva. They started AIR, and that's an after-school homework go-to-college program. So they take teenagers from the reservations, and they take them to UCSD and USD and SDSU, and college students there help these teenagers with homework, and the teenagers are moving back and forth between the reservations and the universities and getting used to being on campus.
Excellent. So what have you learned, Nori, from working with these wonderful kids?
Well, what I wanted to learn, what got me doing this in the first place was I wanted to learn how do you take care of the earth? The other part that I learned was, why don't we? And then I realized that actually came from my people, from the Hebrews, you know, from the mm-hmm. the Old Testament. And that is, we got taught people have dominion over the earth. Mm-hmm. And so that is the Western way of thinking and the Western science way of thinking.
And what is the Native American way of thinking?
Right. And then there's the other way, and that is we're part of the earth, that our bodies are part of the earth, that we're related to the plants and the animals and the soil and the water and the air, mm-hmm. that they're all parts of us. They're inside of us, and we put our bones back in the earth, and we become part of other things through time. So
I believe the word for body and for land is the same, isn't it, in the Kumeyaay language?
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very interesting concept. Makes a lot of sense.
What's the craziest activity that you've done on one of these outings?
Oh, the craziest activity. Well, I had a kid at the Mesa Grande Reservation who wanted to camp out, and he was too young for me to take him anywhere. So it was time for the Perseid meteor shower. So I said, okay, why don't we camp out at the ball field at Mesa Grande? Mesa Grande has mountain lion issues.
Ooh.
Okay. So we do have to watch out, you know, who's at the rear, who's at the end of whenever we're walking.
Uh-oh.
Right. So the ball field has a big, big fence around it, and there's a porta potty. So I said, okay, let's camp out in the ball field. And then people brought tents, and then adults came, and then we had a fire, and we did s'mores, and we did hot dogs. And so we've done that now. We've done it 3 years in a row. And I lay out with the kids in a circle, so all of our heads are together, and we poke each other awake all night long watching the Perseid meteor shower. Fine. Hey, did you see that? Well, no, I didn't see that because my eyeballs are looking in another quadrant.
Interesting. Now, how are the programs different from reservation to reservation, or is it the same?
Well, that's a really great question. Every reservation is entirely different. Some reservations are really pushing to get their kids through college, and those have amazing after-school homework programs. Mm-hmm. Poor kids, I feel so sorry for them. Like the best one is at San Pasqual Reservation. Those kids, they come home from school, they get to play outside for 10 minutes and then inside doing homework. And they really loved when I would show up because they didn't have to finish homework that day. So that's the best. And then the Palma Reservation, it also has a teacher that's in charge of their after school program, but she's willing to incorporate science into it. And so that program is continuing at the
Very
Palma
good.
Reservation.
I was going to ask you how these programs are organized. Right. I think you may have just answered it. But.
Well, that's for the ones that go through education departments. Mm-hmm. And there's the ones that go through their recreation department. So Barona goes Barona goes through recreation. So it's a clean tie to have outdoor science as part of their recreation program, especially for the kids who are, you know, they don't want to become basketball players or soccer players. They want to go outside. It's perfect for the kids at Barona to have it run through the recreation department because outdoor science is like outdoors is a recreation activity, and they have an absolutely fabulous recreation director who's just sitting there with all the moral imperative issues to mm-hmm. the kids: be nice to each other, be kind to the earth, do your homework, respect your elders, and it's all part of his recreation activity, which is mind-boggling.
Good advice that we can all learn from that. Is there publicity for these programs, Nori?
In Indian Voices, we write it up a lot. The editor is Rose Davis of Indian Voices, mm-hmm. and it's a local newspaper. It's in San Diego and in Las Vegas. And every once in a while, she says, write up an article about something or other. So it gets that kind of publicity.
What are some of the successes of your programs?
Well, seeing that it was funded by National Science Foundation in San Diego State, where I'm adjunct faculty, is pushing mm-hmm. this as an education outreach program. It's the academic successes that we think of as success. So we've had one student all the way through with his bachelor's degree through UCSD.
Excellent.
Yeah, and then I have three at Palomar right now. So mm-hmm. that's how we're measuring success.
Learning about geology and the sciences is something that they can take back and have jobs actually on the reservations if they want to, which is an important part of tribal culture. Is that accurate?
Exactly. Every reservation has an environmental office, and every environmental office needs employees. Mm-hmm. And so I work through the environmental offices and let them know who are the kids that, you know, have this real interest, and I let the kids know and let the parents know there are jobs on the reservation.
Very good. Are you appreciated for these efforts, Nori? What has resulted for you from doing this wonderful work?
Oh, what a great question. Yeah, I am appreciated. In fact, for Earth Day at La Jolla Reservation, La Jolla and Palma had a joint Earth Day, and they gave me a plaque, which Environmental Hero 2013.
Oh, marvelous.
Yeah, they gave me a plaque. It was a big slab of oak with a beautiful vase on it and pictures of me with the kids at the La Jolla Reservation and at the Palma Reservation. And then they gave me a Pendleton blanket. And a Pendleton blanket to Indian people is really important because It says you're really important and you really matter if you're given a Pendleton blanket.
Marvelous. And you're working at reservations all over. All of these reservations are here in San Diego County, many of them right here in East County. And I understand that, back to recognition, that you were also one of those 1,000 points of light, if I recall.
Well, it is true. You know, in Washington, this is back to my sister Penny, who said you got to involve kids. So I ran a similar program in Washington, D.C. for inner city kids. It was called What's Under Your Feet. And it was the creek where I was a kid. That's how you turn out a geologist, is that you have a creek. Right. And so it was my creek. And, of course, it was all an African-American neighborhood, and there were a lot of drug people, you know, a lot of police around. And my mother came to visit me from California, and I took her back to my creek, and she said, you know, she says, there's so many kids playing in the creek. She said, why don't you do something for the kids in the creek? So she said, you know, call the police department, ask them. And I called the police department and asked about being in the creek with the kids. And the person, the outreach, community outreach person said, please do this. These kids have nothing.
Great.
So I got started working in the creek of my childhood. And I did that for 10 years. And about year three, the president was the first Bush, George Bush, and Herbert Walker Bush, mm-hmm. and he started this Points of Light, and every federal agency mm-hmm. got told, give us somebody, and the USGS and was just able to just grab my name and say, here, Robbins.
Well, that is quite an honor, quite an achievement. Do you ever bring people along on the outings, other than, obviously, I trekked along and had a great time, but are strangers welcome? Do you take friends or colleagues or students along with you?
I'm always willing to take other people. One, especially like college students, because they're closer in age to the kids that I teach, and they're in college, so they can talk about being in college and why college is important and what you can get out of college. But I love to have friends and colleagues and strangers come. The kids love novelty, so a stranger is novelty, especially if they're guys, because there's not a lot of guys that will just, you know, jump right at the opportunity to go play outdoors with kids. I have no idea why not, but anyway, less guys. So if a guy will show up, I love that, and especially to tell the guys, you know, go grab a couple of the boys, especially the ones that are right there at the edge of trouble, and mm-hmm. sort of aim them in a better direction.
Very good. Nori, thank you so much for joining us today. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know?
You know, there actually is. How I got started in San Diego County.
How did you get started in San Diego County?
When we knew we were retiring from Washington, D.C. and coming to San Diego, I said what I wanted to be was a role model on a reservation, and the question was, how was I going to get that to work? And so I was working with somebody who was running the Indigenous Earth Education Program at San Diego State, and he had contacts. And one of his contacts was Geneva Fitzsimmons at La Jolla Reservation. And she said, oh, you want to talk to Henry Rodriguez, Uncle Henry. And so Uncle Henry was there, and I told him I want to teach outdoor science to kids on reservations and turn some of these kids into scientists. And he said, you want to turn them into hydrologists, into water scientists. Mm. He said, if you're an Indian person, you've got to pay attention to the quality and the quantity of the water that you have on your reservation. And so with his blessing, then I was able to, of course, speak to all the other reservations and tell them, Henry Rodriguez said, you know, we're running it on the La Jolla Reservation. I got it started in 3 months after I moved here. And so I'm working on the La Jolla Reservation, and Henry gave his blessing. And so I've never had anyone say no to any programs at reservations.
Very good, and water is certainly one of the most important issues for all of Southern California. Nori, I want to thank you so much for joining us on this episode of The Tribal Beat. I'm filling in today for Leon Thompson, who's still in the hospital but recovering quite well from his open-heart surgery. I appreciate you joining us on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ. Thank you, Nori.
Thank you.
East County provides a rich and varied culinary experience, and the East County Eater is here to tell you all about it. No backcountry bar and grill is too remote. No specialty food restaurant tucked away in some tiny strip mall is too obscure for the Eater. From a Mediterranean bistro in Alpine to sushi in Santee, East County's homegrown dining establishments will surprise and please you. Food is the Eater's obsession, and East County is the Eater's beat. It's hard work, but someone has to do it. Stay tuned. The East County Eater is on the prowl.
This is Leon Thompson, otherwise known as the East County Eater to readers of East County Magazine. Today I'm reporting from Sharp Grossmont Hospital in La Mesa. My lifetime of savoring great foods, along with a family history of coronary artery disease, has finally caught up with me. So I'll be undergoing triple bypass surgery Friday morning, split down the middle like an oyster, with some fancy rerouting of my plumbing by the cardiac surgeon, and then I'll be trussed up like a holiday turkey with a few weeks to marinate before I'm back on the beat. So by the time you hear this broadcast, hopefully I'll have a healthy heart just in time for the new year. But first, I've decided to review the culinary offerings here at Grossmont Hospital, where I must say the staff service has been superb. For all we hear about problems with our healthcare system, the nurses, doctors, and yes, the nutritionists here have been wonderfully attentive. If you must be in the hospital, it turns out Christmas is a pretty good time to be here. I've been served up turkey and dressing with all the, well, most of the trimmings, though I had to make do with heart-healthy salad and broccoli instead of yams drenched in brown sugar. And I'll be toasting in the new year with non-alcoholic seltzer water instead of the customary champagne. Other entrees have included comfort foods such as meatloaf, and when I asked for fish, they obligingly brought grilled tilapia. I also have to give high marks for presentation. My meals came served up with a purple orchid on the plate. Since I once lived in Hawaii, I appreciated this simple yet elegant touch. My visitors tell me the cafeteria food has been hearty and affordable, including meatless Fridays with entrees such as baked eggplant dish and quiche. 7 days a week, you can get salad, soup, sandwiches, and hot grilled entrees, all for just a few dollars. Now here's another hint. If you're visiting someone for the long term, you can get a weekly parking pass for $15 and avoid breaking the bank at the parking garage. I look forward to getting back on my feet in the near future, and when I do, I'll be making a few changes. Watch for the East County Eater on a mission to discover the most heart-healthy dishes at restaurants in East County. Listeners, if you know of an eatery in East County serving up delicious heart-healthy cuisine, please send your tips to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Life's an adventure, and the East County Eater is eager to be back on the prowl.
Governor Jerry Brown granted a Christmas Eve pardon to a firefighter who saved a teenager's life during the Harris Fire in Potrero, right here in East County, after she suffered serious burns herself. Brooke Lindman had been convicted of firearms, drug, and theft charges almost 20 years ago, but straightened her life out and began working as a firefighter back in 2001. In 2007, her CAL FIRE crew was sent to help save homes in Potrero, where they helped evacuate Richard Varshock, who was 15 years old at the time, and his father, Thomas Varshock. They had been trying to defend their home against the firestorm. But the fire engine was overcome and caught fire, forcing the crew and the Varshocks to race on foot through a wall of flames. Lindman described it as going from pitch black with the sound of a speeding freight train in the background to blue, clear skies and silence. She was burned so severely on her face, in her lungs, and other places that she was later put in an induced coma for 3 weeks, requiring many skin grafts to recover. Recalling the fire, Lindman said,
I was worried about my injuries when suddenly I heard the sound of the teenager screaming in agony, which snapped me out of it, and I realized that now I had a patient. I went back into work mode and was able to take care of him. Richard Varshak survived, thanks to Lindman, though his father perished. Ms. Lindman has provided exemplary service as a firefighter, said Governor Brown in issuing the pardon. As a result of her actions, she had received numerous awards and letters of recognition for her bravery and heroism. Lindman tried to return to work as a firefighter, but she re-injured a knee that was hurt in the Harris fire, so she has since retired. She now has young children of her own, and her story of heroism was documented in the film Trials by Fire. She was among 127 people given the gift of a pardon by Governor Brown this Christmas Eve.
This is Ed Barrena reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ. San Diego State has plans to modernize the Malcolm A. Love Library, though it may take up to 20 years and cost $100 million to complete the remodeling of the library built during the Nixon era. Stephanie Kingsnorth, an architect with Feifner Partners, Architects of Los Angeles, says there isn't enough space for students to study in the library, which hasn't changed much since it opened in 1972. She calls her plan for the building the Library of the Future. The plans aren't radical, but include pushing book stacks on each floor closer to the interior to open up space near windows. The other trick would be digitization of books, so that fewer shelves would be in the library, freeing up space so that students who want to study won't have to plop down on the floor as currently occurs when the library seats are filled. The other changes to be implemented will be a realignment of the dome built during the 90s so that students enter the building on ground level. The original library and the ground level outside will be glassed in to restore the original corner stairwells, which are currently only emergency exits. All the wooden paneling in the library will go, replaced with glass. Art will return to the library, as will the special collections. All of these changes and more will be broken up into 30 segments so the work can be done whenever San Diego State provides funds for the renovations. According to the dean of the library, Gail Etchmeyer, the library has a fund of $500,000 to do some of the work right now. The library will remain open throughout the renovations, which aim to gain 500 additional seats for students in accordance with California State University guidelines.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.